For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
All right, we've been going through the Gospel of John at the rate of one chapter a week, and we're up to chapter 10. So if you've got a Bible, turn to John chapter 10. One of the things that John does in his eyewitness account of Jesus' public ministry is to record certain unique claims that Jesus made about himself. These are called the I am statements. We've seen two of them so far. I am the bread of life, he claimed in John 6. In other words, I and I alone am the sole source of spiritual nourishment for our hungry souls. And then we saw a couple of weeks ago, chapter 8, verse 12, Jesus said, I am the light of the world. I and I alone am the sole source of illumination for darkened souls living in a spiritually dark world. So these are unique claims that Jesus is making for himself, and which then face us with a decision about these claims. Now, in John chapter 10, Jesus makes two more unique claims about himself, but he sets the context for these claims by reminding his audience about Palestinian shepherding. So let's just read that setup. He said, truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter by the door into the fold of the sheep, but who climbs up some other way, he is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is a shepherd of the sheep. To him, the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And when he puts forth all his own, he goes ahead of them, and the sheep follow him because they know his voice. A stranger, they simply will not follow, but they'll flee from him because they do not know the voice of strangers. So there you have it, see? Is your spiritual lesson for the morning. It's not very intelligible to us because we don't really know much about Mideastern shepherding. And so let me briefly fill you in on some of the differences between the shepherding that was common to his audience and what we know about this. You know, for one thing, we have these huge herds, you know, like thousands of sheep. They had very small flocks. The people who ranch sheep today kind of view the sheep as nameless meat on the hoof, mutton on the hoof, you know, but shepherds had a small flock, and they kept their sheep for a long time. Most of them were not raised for slaughter, but for wool. And so they actually gave them names and viewed them more like pets than some nameless herd. We today drive the sheep with dogs or with men in jeeps or four-wheelers. The shepherd always went out ahead of the sheep, and because of the relationship between the sheep and the sheep then would follow the shepherd to water or to a grazing pasture, whatever. So that may help you. Even the people who were familiar with this whole situation, it didn't help them that much, because it says this figure of speech Jesus spoke to them, but they didn't understand what those things were which he had been saying to them. And so beginning in verse 7, he spits it out. He makes it clear what he's saying that this shepherding and sheep illustrates. Jesus says, truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers. But the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. If anyone enters through me, he will be saved. And he'll go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and to kill and to destroy. But I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. So you see, from this illustration, Jesus makes his first claim. He says, I'm the door. In big pasture lands, shepherds from several different flocks would bring their flocks together at night, and they would erect kind of a rude fence around the sheep, because sheep out at night, that's not good. They get poached or slaughtered. And in those pens, there was always only one gate, and usually one of the shepherds served as the gatekeeper for the evening. When the shepherds took their little flocks up into the mountains, they would usually find at night kind of a mini ravine with a small opening, and they'd lead their flock into that little ravine so that the cliffs were the fence. And the shepherd would sit or lie down across the opening. He, in that case, the shepherd was the door. At any rate, the point that Jesus is making is pretty clear. What is a door? A door is access. In this case, access to safety and to nourishment. The door represents the one valid way of access. And Jesus is saying, I am, and in the Greek it's very explicit, I and I alone am that door into God's enclosure, where there is salvation from danger and judgment, and where there is nourishment, namely abundant spiritual life. And so I want to think about this claim just for a second, because it is both an exclusive claim and an inclusive offer. Let's think about each of those. On the one hand, this claim, I am the door, is an exclusive claim. He's saying, I am the only way for people, for human beings, to be saved, to be rescued from spiritual death, and I am the only way to enter into a relationship with God, to actually know God and experience the abundance of that love relationship. Not anyone else, only me. And so he states it positively, I and I alone am the door, and he states it negatively, anyone else, all others who have come posing as the door, who have come promoting another way in, are thieves and robbers. And you might remember that in the context of this talk, Jesus has just been having a conflict with the Pharisees who claim to be a way in to God. And he's referring to them first and foremost here. He makes this same claim in another very famous passage later in the Gospel of John, where he says, I and I alone am the way, the truth, and the life. So there's the positive pronouncement of the claim. Not, I am one of many ways, one of many truths, one of many spiritual life sources, but I'm the only way. And then he states it negatively, just so we don't miss it. No one comes to the Father except through me. Now, this is highly offensive to people who believe that they have found another way to God, or to people, and this is more common in our culture, who say that, you know, there are multiple, in fact, there are probably as many ways to God as there are people who have ever lived. I mean, there's no way that you can square this claim with that belief. And one of the most disrespectful things that can be done in our culture is to insist that Jesus is one of many ways when he expressly says, don't say that about me. That's not what I said. So this is offensive to many because it faces us with the assertion that if we think we've found the way to God, we really haven't. If we think that we're safe because there are many paths to God, then we're not. We're still on the outside. On the other hand, this exclusive claim is simultaneously an inclusive offer. Right? He's saying, anyone can be saved. Anyone can know God if they'll only come through me. Right? He says, if anyone enters into through the door, he'll be saved. And he'll have pasture. And so here, Jesus is doing something else radical. He's taking the normal boundaries of traditional religions, but like your race, like your ethnicity, like how many sins of a certain kind you've committed, like how moral your outward life is. And he's obliterating all of those boundaries and saying, it doesn't matter what your race is, what your ethnicity is, what your gender is, what you've done wrong, where you've come from. Everyone's welcome if you come through me. And that's good news. That's good news for people who know that they're messed up. That's good news for people who know they're not qualified the way they are. So this exclusive claim, it offends the self-righteous. And the inclusive offer, you know, it just attracts people who realize, I got problems. I'm spiritually bankrupt. So there it is. That's the first claim. I am the door. And then the decision that it faces you and me with is, have you entered through the door? If you say, well, I feel like I've kind of always been inside the fence. No, you have not. No, you have not. You have to enter in through the door of Jesus Christ. If you're thinking, well, I'm kind of in the door. No, you're not. Just like saying, I'm kind of pregnant. You are outside because you haven't gone through the door, or you are inside because you have entered through the door. You enter through the door by saying, Jesus, I am coming to you as the way to know God, as the way to be saved from my sins and from death. Admit me into your family, into your flock. And in the moment that you make that conscious decision, then you have entered the door and you are saved. And you will be introduced to the abundant life of a relationship with God. So that's the first claim. I am the door. And then for those who have entered through the door, Jesus makes another claim right after this. The claim that he's the good shepherd. He said, I am also the good shepherd. He said, well, which is it? Are you the door or the good shepherd? He can be both. I am the good shepherd. And again, it's I and I alone am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who is not an owner of the sheep, sees the wolf coming and he leaves the sheep and flees. And then the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired man and he's not truly concerned about the sheep. But I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me. So here's another claim. If you've entered through the door, then Jesus says, now I want you to know that I'm not just the way in. I'm not just the only access into the kingdom of God. I'm the only competent leader of your life. The word good, you see in the Greek there are two words, agathos and kalos. Agathos emphasizes goodwill, which is certainly true of Jesus, as we'll see. But this is the word kalos, which means beautiful or excellent or competent. And that's what he's saying. He's saying, I and I alone am the only competent leader of your life. I'm the only one who can get you where you need to go and keep you safe. And that claim then is faces us with a decision. Those of us who have entered through the door, Jesus asks you, he asks me, will you entrust your life to my direction? Or will you continue to be a self-directing sheep or a sheep who is trusting other incompetent, even dangerous, shepherds? And I think that's a big claim and it's a big decision. And it raises for me, and it should raise for you, this question: why should I entrust the direction of my life to Jesus? Why should I hand over the reins? Why should I give him the wheel? And you know, one thing that I love about Jesus and one thing I love about the Bible is that whenever the Bible calls on us to do something, it always gives us reasons for why we ought to do it. He doesn't just say, because I said so. I remember my dad used to say that to me, and it wasn't highly convincing. In this passage, he anticipates this question from his sheep, and he supplies us with six answers to this question, six reasons why you and I ought to entrust ourselves to him as the good shepherd. Let's just walk through them quickly. The first reason, which is implicit through the whole analogy, is because I'm like a sheep. And you know, by the way, in case you don't know, that's not highly complimentary, okay? I mean, sheep, let's see, sheep are known for their stupidity. They literally have been known to follow the sheep in front of them off a cliff. They are prone to wander and get lost. They are known to be stubborn and timid, and they are essentially defenseless. One theologian made a tongue-in-cheek statement. He said, sheep themselves are prima facie evidence against the theory of evolution, because in a survival of the fittest world, how could they ever have lasted? I mean, sheep were made to be shepherded because they're so stupid, stubborn, timid, prone to wander. And if they fall down on their backs, it's called being cast. They can't get up. They're like a turtle on a shell. And so, you know, part of what Jesus is saying is you need me to be your shepherd because you're a sheep. Now, you won't hear that a lot in our self-esteem culture, which is all the time telling us we're so good, we're so competent, we're so capable. You are not. How much bigger mess do you have to make of your life to realize that you're not a very good shepherd? You're a sheep. I'm a sheep. That's a good reason. Here's another good reason. We should entrust our lives, the direction of our lives, to Jesus because he loves me enough to die for me. Right? He says that twice. I'm the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He says, the one who's a hired hand, and they would hire, you know, people to do some of the shepherding work. He says, when they see the wolf coming, they leave the sheep and flee. That's what, you know, what are the sheep to a hired hand? They're a paycheck. They're a means to money for other things in their life. There's no personal commitment. There's no love. He says, I'm the good shepherd. And I lay my life down for the sheep. Later, Jesus says, greater love has no one than this, than he lay down his life for his friends. But I lay down my life for the sheep. And this wasn't just rhetoric. He's saying, that's what I came to do, that's what I will do, and that's what he did. And he did not lay his life down for us. He does not love us because we're so wonderful. It's not our worth that elicits Jesus' love. The Bible says Jesus' love for us comes from within him for reasons that we can't understand because we're just sheep. Or to use Paul's words, we're sinners, helpless, ungodly enemies. And while we were all of those things, Christ died for the ungodly. And the point here is, if he loves me enough to even lay down his life, then certainly I can trust his motives to direct me because he's not using me. A third reason is because Jesus knows me better than I know myself, right? He says, the shepherd calls his own sheep by name and he leads them out. And remember, they follow him because he knows them and he's given them a name and they recognize his voice when he calls their name. I'm the good shepherd. I know my own and my own know me. Now that's a good reason. When you got someone in your life who loves you so much that he would even lay his life down for you. And when that same person knows you better than you know yourself. That's a novel thought for our psychological culture where we each kind of believe we're the experts in self-knowledge. We are not. You're deeply confused about who you are. So am I. We can't distinguish rightly between what we want and what we need. Jesus can. Jesus knows. He knows the difference between what I want and what I need, and he's committed to give me what I need. We don't really know who we are. You know, we're prone to believe what other people say they know about us. You're a loser. You're the greatest ever. Neither one of those is true. You're a sheep loved by Jesus. And so he relates to us. He tends to us based on a deep and sure knowledge of who we are. Do you believe that? Or do you still believe I know best who I am and what I need? That's a good way to make your life into a train wreck. There's a fourth reason. Because living in Jesus' flock is good for me. In verse 16, he says, you know, I got some other sheep which aren't even of this fold, and I must bring them also, and they will hear my voice, and they will become one flock with one shepherd. And probably here Jesus is referring specifically to Gentiles, non-Jewish people who would come to believe in him. And he says, I'm going to bring them together right in the same fold, Gentiles with Jews. Kosher with non-kosher, circumcised with uncircumcised. I'm going to bring them together in my flock just the way I want them to be together because I'm the good shepherd and I know sheep need not only a good shepherd, they need to be in my flock with other sheep. It's not good for a sheep to be alone. For isolated sheep, I was told as a very young Christian something that saved my spiritual life. This guy told me, Gary, isolated Christians are defeated Christians. Isolated sheep are sheep in danger. And it is the will of the good shepherd to bring each of us. In fact, he has indeed brought each and every one of us into proximity in this place, in this time of our lives with sheep that are very different than us. Because he knows it's good for us to be together in the same flock under his shepherding. You believe that? Or are you still buying into the American line that we all need to be autonomous individuals committed really to no one so we keep all our options open to go our own way? That is highly dangerous. And part of embracing Jesus as the good shepherd is to say, you know what, I'm going to take my place in the flock of God here and open my life up to other sheep. Yeah, I know you're going to lead me to a great degree, and you're going to tend to me to a great degree in the flock. There's another reason why you should trust him as the good shepherd, because he says he guarantees to get us home. Right? He says later on in this passage, my sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me, and I give eternal life to them, and they will never perish, and no one will snatch them out of my hand. In the construction of the Greek here, this is so emphatic. It reads something like this. They shall not, I repeat, shall not ever perish in the slightest. That's the language. And he's making a guarantee that no shepherd could make to their flocks, that I will get you through whatever stands between us and home, and I will get you home safely. I guarantee it. He does not guarantee that he will prevent us from trouble in this world. In chapter 16, he says, in this world, my sheep will have trouble. But he says, be of good courage, because I've overcome the world. And you know, many of you know Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd. And because the Lord is my shepherd, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will not be terrified, because you are with me. And that psalm ends, as many of you know, surely goodness and mercy will literally pursue me all the days of my life, and then I will dwell in the, where? In the great pen, sheep pen, in the house of the Lord forever. This is ultimate and eternal security. No one else can deliver that to you. You certainly can't deliver it to you. I can't. That's interesting, isn't it? That Jesus is making, really, he's in a way echoing Psalm 23 throughout this passage. In a very real way, Jesus is saying, I'm the Lord. The Lord is your shepherd, and I'm the Lord, so I'm the good shepherd. And he makes that explicit with his sixth reason. The sixth reason why you ought to entrust the direction of your life to Jesus is because he's God. He says, my Father who has given them to me is greater than all other persons. No one is able to snatch them out of the Father's hand, and I and the Father are one. Not one in the sense that they're the same person, because he refers to the Father as a different person, but one in nature and one in purpose. This is one of hundreds of passages in the Bible that introduce us to the reality of what we call the Trinity, that God is a community of persons who are distinct persons, but who share the same divine nature and who are perfectly united in their purpose. And this is an explicit claim to deity. The people who listened to him knew that's what he was saying, because it says in the next verse, they picked up rocks to stone him. He's like, what are you stoning me for? They said, for blasphemy. And he didn't say, oh, well, you misunderstood. I mean, we're all really one with God in a pantheistic way. He did not say that. He let the claim stand. This is why he can get you safely home, because all authority and all power is his. This is why he can relate to each one of his sheep with perfect intimacy. You can't do that. How many people are you capable of being truly intimate with? 3, 4? Jesus can be perfectly intimate with each of his sheep. How can he do that? Because he's God. He's the infinite personal good shepherd. This is why when he lays down his life, his death pays for all the sin of all his sheep. How could that be? Because he's God, his death has infinite value to pay for human sin. I don't know about you, but those are pretty good reasons. Pretty good reasons. Remember, this is the claim, I'm the good shepherd. The claim faces you and me with a decision. Will I consciously, personally, entrust my life and the direction of my life to Jesus Christ? Or will I, by default, continue to be my own shepherd? This is a decision that's distinct from entering through the door. This is a decision that almost all Christians make after they've entered through the door, after they've gotten to know the Good Shepherd a little bit. Then comes usually a point in time where we sense him facing us with this claim. I remember where I was sitting. The couch that I was sitting on 40 years ago when I read a chapter, excerpt of which I'm about to read you, and at the end of that chapter, I knew that Jesus Christ was saying to me, it's time for you to make this decision. Here's what I read. It's from Watchman Nee's book, The Normal Christian Life. He says, presenting myself to God, which is his way of saying entrusting the direction of my life to the Good Shepherd. Presenting myself to God implies a recognition that I am altogether God's. This giving of myself is a definite thing, just as definite as receiving Christ. There must be a day when I pass out of my own hands into his. And from that day forward, I belong to him and no longer to myself. If we give ourselves unreservedly to God, many adjustments may have to be made. Well, we know that. That's why we have reservations. In family, in business, or relationships, or in the matter of our own personal views, his finger will touch point by point everything that is not of him, and he'll say, that must go. Are you willing? It's always foolish to resist his will. But it is a blessed, that means a fulfilling thing, a satisfying thing, just to hand ourselves over to him and let him have his way with us. My giving of myself to him must be an initial fundamental act. And then day by day, I must go on giving myself to him, not finding fault with his use of me, but accepting with praise even what the flesh finds hard. That way leads to true enrichment. I do not consecrate, that is, I do not give myself to God. I don't consecrate myself to be a missionary or to be a preacher. I consecrate myself to God, to do his will where I am, be it in school or in the office, or the kitchen, or wherever he may in his wisdom send me. Whatever he ordains for me is sure to be the very best, for nothing but good can come to those who are wholly his. Do you believe that? Those of you who have entered through the door, have you resigned from being the shepherd of your own life and entrusted yourself to Jesus to be the leader of your life, to take your life where he wants it to go? Many, many true Christians have not given themselves to Jesus as the good shepherd. And maybe that's the decision that he's facing you with right here, right now, this morning. And you just need to say to him, Lord Jesus, you are the door, and I've come through the door, and I'm in God's family, but I resign from being my own shepherd. I give you the title deed to my life. I give you the wheel. That way lies true enrichment, for nothing but good can come to those who are wholly his. Man, it's true. You know, I don't hold myself out to be like, you know, Mr. Super Christian by any means. But I am here to tell you that that is a decision that I have never, never regretted. I'm so glad that I gave my life to Jesus as the Good Shepherd. He's never burned me. It will never burn you. You'll burn yourself. Other people will burn you. He will not. Well, as you can see by what Watchman Nee says here, to entrust the direction of your life to Jesus as the Good Shepherd carries with it another implication. You heard him say here that I don't consecrate myself to be a missionary or a preacher, but I consecrate myself to God for him to use me. We don't like that language either. I don't think I've ever been used by any other person and had it been a good thing. But it's a good thing when the Good Shepherd uses you, when he works through you. And the implication here that I want us to end by thinking about is that Jesus is also telling us, implicitly in this passage, explicitly other passages, I call you to be my under-shepherd. Yeah. He not only is the door through which we enter to become part of the flock of God, he not only is the good shepherd who alone is competent to direct our lives, but he tells us that if we are his sheep, we'll always be primarily a sheep and him the shepherd. That's my primary identity. I never outgrow that. Okay? But in the economy of God, as I follow him, the good shepherd, as a sheep, he is going to make me into an under-shepherd to help with his other sheep in some capacity. That's just what he does. And so it breaks the analogy. But that's all right, because he already broke it. You can't have a door and a sheep shepherd at the same time. He's the door of the shepherd, and he does this to us. And in this passage, you remember, if you were here last week, he's already been talking about bad under-shepherds, the Pharisees. And the flock of God was suffering because there were bad under-shepherds. Jesus wants to equip and deploy good under-shepherds. And he says that very clearly in Matthew 9. It says, when Jesus saw the crowds of people, poor in spirit, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. There's that imagery. It moved him deeply. And then he said to his disciples, I'm the good shepherd, so I'll take all care of all of them without any help from you. Is that what he said? He said, the harvest, switching metaphors, is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. You've entered the door, through the door. You've followed Jesus as the good shepherd. One of the things that Jesus is going to do is he's going to make you into a worker to help with his harvest. Every one of us, in some capacity. The health of the flock of Jesus Christ, just listen carefully, The health of the flock of Jesus Christ depends in some measure, in order not to say too much, depends in some measure on my willingness to be the under shepherd that he wants me to be. There's no way around that. You know, he's been adding a lot of sheep to this flock over the last year or so. Many, many people have come to Christ or have begun to walk with Christ as the good shepherd over the last couple of years in this little part of his flock. And it delights me to see newer sheep in these little flocks of home groups who are beginning to flourish in their lives. Why? Why are they flourishing? Because they come together and turn on a DVD? Because there are under shepherds there. Some who are in official roles of leadership, others who are workers. Because there are under shepherds there who are choosing to do what they can to nourish and watch over the younger sheep. What happens when one of those little flocks gets so big that it can't fit into the same house anymore? Well, we just close the door, right, and put a lock on it. But we cannot do that. Jesus says, I have other sheep. We in some way have to work with him to multiply that little flock into two other flocks so that other sheep can come and be nourished and get health. How's that going to happen? Where are the under shepherds going to come for that to happen? It's going to come from within the flock itself. It's going to come from you and from me in some way. We praise God for ministries like Renegade and the work among international students, which is happening on several fronts, and the medical clinic, and other works like Oasis, and other works like Hope Ministry. He has created unique new ministries through which he's reaching people for himself in this community. And to a great degree, that's happening because there are people who have agreed to be his under-shepherds in those ministries. And they're thriving. And like I was talking with Mike Sullivan the other day about Renegades, like, we need more workers. That's what we need. The harvest is plentiful. It's the workers who are few. So you see, in much of American Christianity, this point is not understood. It's like, well, there's a few super under-shepherds, and everyone else just stays as consumer sheep. That's not God's way. Every sheep is to mature into an under-shepherd in some capacity. Indeed, the abundant life of which Jesus speaks depends in part on following him into your under-shepherd role. We'll come back to that in John 15. So anyway, many of you are thinking right now, well, I'm unqualified for that because I'm so sinful. Oh, really? How about what Paul said? He says, I'm the least of the apostles. I don't even deserve to be called an apostle because I killed Christians for a living. How's that for sinful? But by the grace of God, I am what I am, and his grace to me was not without effect. You can't be so sinful that Christ can't shape you into his under-shepherd. You think, I'm unqualified because I'm so inadequate. Oh, really? Paul says about this ministry, who is adequate for these things? That's a pretty good question. Not that we are adequate in ourselves to consider anything in this work as coming from ourselves, but our adequacy is from God. God's grace makes us qualified. God's power makes us adequate. We do not draw people to our own worthiness and adequacy. We draw people to Christ. And so really the only thing that stands in the way of you and me becoming the under-shepherds that Christ wants us to be is our own unwillingness. And all we have to do is take that off the table and say, I'm willing. I'm willing to be fashioned into the worker that you want me to be. And you know what he'll start to do? He'll just give you one step to take. And I'm going to end right there. Once you say, I'm willing, just ask him, what one step do you want me to take to answer this call? And it's amazing how he will give you a personalized step to take. Maybe it'll be to open your life up to another brother or sister. Maybe it'll be to get serious about learning his word so you can feed other people. Maybe it will be to volunteer for a ministry role in one of these ministries. Maybe it will be to say, I'm willing to begin to try to care for a younger Christian. I don't know what it is. He knows what it is, and he'll tell you. It's a great privilege. It's a great privilege to be an under-shepherd in the flock of God. You will never find a greater privilege. Get in on the privilege. All right, that's enough from John 10.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.